From Machu Picchu, Peru, welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show. Coming up this week, six things that we learned from the fastest ever editions of Paris-Roubaix. 260 kilometres at over 30 miles per hour. That's 48k an hour.
WTF, I think. I also got a stack of new tech, from wheels and tubes to the world's most expensive mudguard, and how tech might help in the battle against potholes.
Yeah, and no, we're not talking tyres here, but self-driving cars.
Intriguing. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Wout van Aert has finally landed the victory that the world has been waiting for. A cobbled monument.
Yeah, after years of seemingly limitless potential and then more years of bad luck, injury and a crisis of confidence, he was able to match Pogacar on the cobbles and then frankly smash him in a sprint.
The fairy tale ended 90 minutes later though, when Marianne Vos just failed to outsprint Franzi Koch, missing an opportunity to land one of the very few races that she's yet to win.
Yeah, but she is only 38. So she has plenty of time.
Plenty of time, yeah. Only someone over 40 would say that, though, I've got to say.
So. Yes.
We also learned last week that airbag clothing is a step closer to becoming mainstream after French brand Von Riesel have revealed that they're in the final stage of testing a new skin suit for racing, which they're going to deploy protective airbags in a fraction of a second.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how far that airbag trend goes, won't it? Now, we also learned, thanks to new research, that cycling in cities is still on the rise, even after the pandemic bubble. So Paris, Berlin, New York and London have all seen an increase in the percentage of trips taken by bike, with Paris the outstanding success story, right? So it's gone from 0.4% of all trips taken 30 years ago up to 11%
now. You spoke a lot about Paris in your video at the weekend, didn't
you? I did, yeah.
Finally, back to Paris-Roubaix, we learned that this year's races were the fastest ever, as Si mentioned. Wout van Aert averaged a whopping 48.9 kilometres per hour. For those of you who work in miles, that's 30.4 miles per hour. Average for 160 miles.
Bonkers. I mean, that is a ridiculous speed for any bike race, yeah. Let alone the most brutal one-day race on the calendar, which features over 50 kilometres of cobbles. And the women's race, you'd say, was also the fastest of the six editions that they have raced so far.
Now, speeds have grown at a quite astounding rate in recent years. To give you a sense of just how much they've increased, the last rider into the velodrome in the men's race on Sunday was ES Alistair McKellar. Despite officially being outside the time limit on the day and therefore not credited with a position, his average speed of 44.8 kilometres per hour would actually have been enough to win all but five editions in the race's 123-year history. He's outside the time limit.
Do you think that will give him any comfort, the fact that he finished outside the time limit? He would have won if only he was 6 years older.
Apparently, he couldn't start last year due to concussion. So I think even though he wasn't credited with the placing, he won't care too much. He got to the Roubaix Velodrome, so he's a gladiator.
There you go. Now, this handy graph that Dan has knocked up gives a visual representation of just how rapidly those speeds have increased in the last few years. After decades where you can see speeds remain fairly constant, surprisingly so, actually.
Yeah.
I would have thought there would have been some kind of change. 2021 marked a distinct change.
Yeah, it feels like we're suddenly in a bull market, doesn't it, in terms of the speeds?
I had to get Dan to explain what that was, by the way. If you don't know what a bull market is either, don't worry.
I also initially said bear market, so I got it wrong.
And I didn't know what that was either.
No. Well, I'll explain to Si, so don't worry. Anyway, the question is, why have the speeds got so much quicker so quickly? Well, here are six things we learnt from the last Sunday in hell. Number one, tech has made Paris-Roubaix faster than ever, although not necessarily easier.
No. So bike technology, as you all know by now, has never been so advanced. 10 years ago, Matt Heyman made history by riding an aero road bike to victory in that particular Paris-Roubaix. And at that time, it was unheard of.
It was,
wasn't it, really? Well, I mean, it was unheard of because he was the first one to do it. Riders would pretty much always opt for standard bikes, which had more clearance for bigger tyres and were deemed more comfortable for the rigours of Roubaix.
10 years on, developments have got to the point where almost every rider is riding on an aero bike. Likewise, 20 years ago, you would rarely see deep section carbon wheels being used at that race in particular. Most would still opt for the more traditional box section aluminium rims combined with like 36 spokes, I think.
Yeah, and now, of course, everyone is using aero wheels. But the biggest development, and the one that has made the most difference to speed and also comfort, you'd say, is tyres.
It is tyres. I mean, possibly the least sexy of bike tech.
I think chamois is probably less sexy.
Well, probably, yes. But tyres are the one that have made the biggest difference to speed in every race, but especially, I would say, to Paris-Roubaix. Does that mean the race is easier, though? Not really. I mean, in the words of the great Greg LeMond, cycling never gets easier. You just go faster.
Yeah. That said, it is undoubtedly more comfortable than riding on 25 millimetre wide tyres, isn't it? And with the speed they're averaging now, they're also racing for much less time. It's about an hour quicker.
An hour? That's mental, isn't it?
Isn't it? In the video I made recently where I rode a vintage Paris-Roubaix bike and compared it to a Canyon Air Road with modern Paris-Roubaix spec, I worked out that the old bike, at my speeds, not, sadly, Matthew Van Der Poel speeds, was roughly 3k an hour slower.
Was it?
On cobbles.
That much?
Yeah, that much.
At your speed, that's over 10%.
Yeah.
Right. Right then, the second thing that we learned on Sunday was that whilst tyres are faster than ever, in pushing the limits of pressure within them, or lack thereof, there were more punctures.
Yeah, now this is a really interesting one, isn't it, right? It is interesting. Bear with us. Tyre pressures have always been a big topic for Roubaix in particular, isn't it? In part because in the olden days, tyres used to leak air, didn't they? So you had to get the pressure right at the start so that it was optimal when you hit the cobbles.
That's because you had to use the tubular tyres and they had latex inner tubes, hence the leaking of air. But yeah, the calculations were off the charts, weren't
they? Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, many riders are now using 35mm wide tyres. So big, they're illegal in cyclocross races.
Yeah, that's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, anyway. Now, bigger tyres at lower pressures make a huge difference to how much of the vibration from the cobbles reaches the riders. And because of that, the temptation then is to go really low to soak up even more vibration.
When we say really low, apparently some riders on Sunday were using 3 bar, which is just 43 psi. But with that comes risk. So despite the extra volume of those big 35mm tyres, if you hit a jagged stone at 50 kilometres per hour, you're quite likely to hit the rim.
Yes, you are. You're quite likely to break a rim, I suppose, at that point. But at the very least, probably break the seal of a tubeless tyre. You do that, the air is going to exit pretty darn quickly, as we saw for so many riders on Sunday.
I'd say more so in the men's than the women's. At least that's what I felt anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because the two big favourites in the men's race, Van der Poel and Pogacar, both punctured twice, that it felt like they were more in the men's than previous years. I'm not sure.
Well, and Ganna had 43 million punctures, didn't he?
He did have a lot, yeah.
Van Aert had one, two?
Two.
Two?
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot.
There were a lot, yeah.
I don't think it was just that, though. I mean, we haven't got any data to back this up, but it definitely felt like there were more punctures. And the other factor, as well, is that they're not just running lower pressures. They're also opting for pretty much the fastest rolling tyres as well, which are often more prone to flats.
Do you know what? I did actually see a little bit of data, and early reports suggest that the last time there were more punctures in the men's race was 2021, which you might remember was when Colbrelli won, and it was very, very wet and muddy.
Oh, yeah. That would make sense, wouldn't it? Now, this is definitely something that the teams are going to be looking at very closely over the coming 12 months. Ollie and Alex, actually, are looking at it even more closely on Thursday.
Are they?
Yeah, in the GCN Tech Show. But essentially, avoiding punches at Roubaix whilst maintaining their rolling speed is essentially the jackpot, isn't it? But as yet, they're not there. Or maybe they were there and they've just gone past it.
I think they thought they were there
until
Sunday. I guess the problem is that testing, it's really quite difficult to do properly, isn't it? It's one thing hitting them hard in a training ride. It's another when you're in the middle of the race, fatigued, blinded by the rider or riders in front, and you're much less able to pick the smoothest lines over the cobblestones.
Yeah. Right then. The third thing that we learnt was that the speeds are not just incomprehensibly ridiculous, but not only was it the fastest Paris-Roubaix in history, for the men, it was also the fastest monument in history, so that's one of the biggest, the five big one-day races. And then, it was actually one of the fastest one-day races in history, Full stop.
Yeah. The only race I could find that's ever been faster was the 2015 Paris Tours, which is just as flat as Paris-Roubaix, but without the cobblestones. I think they had a roaring tailwind that day. Well done to Matteo Trentin for that win. Anyway, the women, as we mentioned, also set a record in spite of the addition of more cobblestones than previous editions. And you'd imagine that those speeds for the women are going to continue to increase as the general standard within the peloton continues to rise.
Yeah. Now, we should say, you mentioned the roaring tailwind for Paris-Tours. They did have a tailwind for the majority of the day though, at Paris-Roubaix, didn't they? And actually, it was a strong one at that, because I had it as a headwind when I was on my way home from a long bike ride.
Weren't you riding at home?
Oh, I was, yeah.
400 kilometres away?
Closer to 500, but yeah.
Right, undoubtedly the same conditions then for you.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Plus, there's also the fact that the early break never went in the men's race on Sunday. That meant that there were almost constant attacks for those first 100Ks of asphalt road, where, incidentally, they averaged over 52 kilometres per hour.
Right, well, that brings on to the fourth thing that we learnt. The early break might be a thing of the past. I feel like we might be jumping the gun on this one, ever so slightly, because I feel like we might have said it before. And given that last year it went so early, it actually caught people by surprise. But the way things are now, it's definitely harder for it to go, isn't it? Because almost every team wants to have someone in that early break. And so the riders then end up just cancelling each other out.
It does feel that way, doesn't it? In fact, the only team that wasn't really getting into smaller moves on Sunday was UAE Team Emirates. But then whenever Visma Lisa Bike or Alpecin Premier Tech in particular got into a move with a rider, UAE would immediately chase it down.
Yeah. Now, Paris-Roubaix has long been a race where you can pick up a great result if you get yourself up the road, and with, therefore, a healthy advantage over the favourites. But the more years have gone on, the more teams and riders have been aware of that, and then the more of them are trying to pull that trick.
Yeah, you can see why, can't you? And that effectively means that everyone starts cancelling each other out, as we said.
Yeah.
Right, number five, then. Tadej Pogacar will never give up.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't something we necessarily learnt on Sunday, is it? We have seen this trait in him for years. But I think we mean it in more ways than one now, right? Because not only did he never give up on winning on Sunday, not when he took a Shimano neutral service bike. That kind of feels like a little bit like a nail in the coffin of your chances, doesn't it? But then he also, when he was with Van Aert as well, he just kept trying, didn't he? I don't think he will give up until he wins it now. Or at least until he retires, whichever comes first.
No, he'll be back until he wins that race, like I said, or until he retires.
Well, he hinted that he wouldn't be back next year, didn't he?
Oh, did he? I missed that.
I think so, yeah.
Oh.
I couldn't tell you where I saw it, but at some point on the internet over the past 48 hours.
Yeah, I missed that completely. Mm. Well, it would be great if he did come back, because whatever you think about his dominance in this sport right now, there are millions of people who are tuning in or even heading to the roadside just to catch a glimpse of him racing. Just a few years ago, it would have been quite astounding, really, to see a Tour de France winner even start in Compiègne for Paris-Roubaix, let alone have such a good chance of winning.
It made the headlines when Wiggins did it, didn't it?
It kind of did,
long
didn't
after
it?
He'd stopped trying to win Grand Tours.
But I'd say that now Pogacar's made it seem almost like the norm. Well, certainly for the future, anyway.
Yeah. Vingegaard, ball's in your court, isn't it? And actually, we should say, it's not just Pogacar as well, but Pauline Ferrand-Prévot is the current Tour de France champ on the women's side as well. And I think they're setting a fantastic example, aren't they? If you want to be seen as a great of cycling, you will need to be riding the Cobble Classics as well as the Grand Tours.
That's the kind of precedence I think they're setting, isn't it?
I mean, that was your lead, wasn't it? You set that example. You rode Tour of Flanders and the Giro and Tour de France.
Yeah, I never did Roubaix. Although there was a Roubaix stage of the Tour de France when I did.
Yeah, you didn't need to do Roubaix, did you? Because you did that one.
Exactly, yeah. And Tour Hushov, my teammate, won that stage thanks to my help within the first 10Ks.
Did you actually help him?
Probably, I don't remember. I certainly didn't in the last 10. Anyway, I know that much. Right, finally, we know that Mathieu van der Poel really is made of different stuff. I mean, no mere mortal would have got so close to getting back in the game after conceding well over 2 minutes at such a crucial point in the race.
Yeah, I thought he was completely out of it, even with the knowledge of just how good he is. He got a tiny bit of help along the way, didn't he? But for the most part, it was just him riding on his own into the wind, just steadily closing the gap.
That's incredible.
Tadej Pogacar.
I think what impressed me most, though, was just how much effort he put in to get fourth place at the end of the day. I mean, this is a man, obviously, who's won this race 3 times in a row. But rather than just cruising to the velodrome at the point he knew the win was out of the window, he used the little power and energy that he still had left in his legs to win the sprint from the group he was in for fourth.
Yeah, I think it's because he knows that you will always dig out stats like he's not finished worse than fourth in the last 10 yes. editions. And that sounds a lot better on paper, doesn't it, than like, well, he's not finished worse than eighth.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's Van Aert.
He's got to think of his legacy, hasn't he?
Van Aert hasn't finished worse than eighth in the last 15 monuments he started. And he's finished all of them.
Fair play to him, given that, you know, I'd written him off personally. But yeah, that's all right. What? Do you know what, actually, with Vanderpool as well, he, I think what struck me about him not throwing in the towel in this race is because earlier in his career, he did used to throw in the towel, didn't he? Particularly cyclocross, like world champs. Mm. So I remember him like just completely capitulating if it wasn't going his way. And then mountain biking, he's done a bit, hasn't he?
He has in mountain biking a bit, actually, you're right.
Yeah, but whereas here, I'm like, well, if ever you're going to throw in the towel, it's when you're 2 minutes plus back. And then, like,
I don't blame him for throwing in the towel in a cyclocross race or a mountain bike race when he hasn't got a chance of winning, because he's that much of a champion. And that's why I was so surprised to see him go all in for fourth place when he's won it three times. Anyway.
He so nearly caught them up as well, didn't he?
Oh, man, yeah, within 20 seconds. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay, anyway. Here's a question for you, Dan. How did those races, the men's and women's races, rate on a scale of 1 to 10 compared to previous Paris-Roubaix's?
Well, I will start with the men's, which I thought was absolutely off the charts brilliant.
Oh, so 10. 10 out of 10.
I am going to give it a 10, yeah.
Whoa.
I mean, I was genuinely glued to the screen from start to finish.
I'm glad you said genuinely and not literally, because that would have been quite amusing.
Yeah, it would have been, yeah. I just thought it was dramatic, pretty much from the off. There was even a minor split in the peloton before the cobblestone, etc. Then all of the drama that we had with Pogacar and after Vanderpool, the other favourites as well having their problems, and then just not knowing what was going to happen between Van Aert and Pogacar towards the end. And who
well,
was
even
going to
with
win.
Vanderpool, like it never yeah. looked like he was totally out of it.
No, I thought it was absolutely compelling viewing, pretty much from start to finish for 5.25 hours, which is not that long.
Yeah.
And in the women's, we didn't get to see as much of it this year as in previous years because it was on the same day as the men's, of course.
I was really gutted about that, actually, because on Saturday, I genuinely wanted to watch a really great bicycle race.
And you hadn't realised it was on?
No, I did know it was on. I just like, I kept thinking, like, oh, is it Paris-Roubaix today? Yeah. And I was like, oh, no, it's tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm not going to score it 10 because I think it would have been a Sunday in heaven rather than hell if Marianne Vos had won that race as well.
Yeah.
I mean, take nothing away from Franzi Kot. She absolutely deserved to win it. She's been so strong in recent weeks. She was so strong on Sunday. But it would have been the fairy tale ending if Vos had won that race.
Yeah.
Especially after all of that work from Ferran Prevot, her teammate. She yeah. laid herself completely on the line for her teammate. I'm going to give that an 7.5.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, some big scoring Paris-Roubaix. Let us know what you think in the comment section down below, assuming that you were able to watch two of the greatest bike races in living memory. Get involved in the comment section, let us know what you think, and of course, what your big takeaway from the races was as well.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with news of potholes.
Yippee! We spoke a couple of weeks back about how the cost of maintaining roads might mean that asphalt may return to gravel in some places, but owing to the rise in vehicle weight, keeping potholes at bay is becoming an increasing problem.
Yeah. Now, if you ask any cyclists, we can probably point out where the worst potholes mm-hmm. are because they're potentially life-threatening, aren't we? But we spotted in the news that Waymo's self-driving cars have partnered up with Waze. I mean, I'm assuming the cars themselves haven't partnered up with Waze. That's like when AI gets a bit more developed. But anyway, the pair of them are going to be mapping out pothole locations and then making them available to city authorities.
Which sounds great, but whether or not anyone has the money to fix them is probably a different matter.
True,
isn't it?
But quite cool, isn't it, that a self-driving car can register potholes and then report them?
Mm. Yeah.
If it does anything. Anyway, moving on, there was a whole load of new tech released over the last week. Now, firstly, Canyon seemingly caused great controversy, Dan, by creating a new aero bike that will fit big, fat 40mm tyres, if you break the rules, 35 officially, for their pro riders like Vanderpool and wannabes like me. But then they called it an Endurace.
Yeah, the controversy stemming from the fact that the Endurace line has up until now been more about relaxed geometry as well as big tyre clearance.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I was quite surprised by that particular
reaction. You were, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, genuinely. Because, I mean, I absolutely love the new bike. Mm. I really wouldn't mind if it had been called Barbara or Brian, let alone an Endurace, but it seems like a few people were really upset that the bike hadn't been designed with them in mind, but rather Matthew Vanderpoel.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, this new bike looks like an air road, feels like an air road, but it's even stronger, even stiffer laterally, but with more compliance built into the seat post. And of course, the aforementioned increased tyre clearance as part of Canyon's top tier CFR line, so it's only available currently with premium group sets.
Yeah. Now, to my mind, it is a bike for unashamedly hammering as fast as possible wherever you like, pretty much. And as I said a moment ago, I think that's great.
I think could tell from that video that you quite like that new bike.
Yes.
Commenter Neil Armstrong said you needed a Barry White soundtrack for it, which I thought was quite amusing.
Oh, if only we had the rights to play a bit of Barry White.
Yeah.
One
day, mate.
One day. Given that Alex Payton now is the official custodian of that very bike, it has unfortunately gone from a love story quite quickly to one of heartbreak. Yeah. This would be like the breakup album.
Yeah.
Did Taylor Swift do a breakup album recently?
Don't ask me, sorry.
Max, did Taylor Swift do a breakup album?
Last year.
Last year, it'd be like a breakup album.
Got somebody sub 43 in the room here.
42, please. Mate.
Oh, 42, sorry, mate.
God.
All right. Anyway, as it turned out, Vanderpoel actually didn't ride the new bike in Paris-Roubaix on Sunday, sticking instead with his tried and tested aero with 32mm tyres. But it makes you wonder if next year he'll be back with bigger 35mm tyres and that new bike.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that is an interesting what if kind of question, isn't it? Then we have to credit Road CC for sniffing this one out. They've picked up on some new recently released mudguards or fenders, which are only $1,000.
No.
Yeah, they are. $1,000 for some mudguards. Yeah, they're from the very bougie American brand 22 Bikes, and they are made from titanium.
Yeah.
Apparently, they are strong and light, although I suspect if you are in the market for some of them, those probably aren't the big selling points,
no,
are they?
No, but they might put a smile on your face on wet days.
Yes.
More tech now. Inner tubes.
Woo!
So our mates at Prodiv just released some new TPU tubes called Smart Tube Lights.
Yeah, the OG Smart Tube, which is definitely not heavy, by the way, even though it's not called the Light, solved one of the previous issues of TPU tubes by using a slightly refined type of material. It allowed the tube to stretch, which meant that one tube could cover a variety of tyre and even wheel sizes, a little bit like Boutal tubes do, whereas like the OG TPU tubes,
pretty rigid, weren't they?
They're rigid, yeah. So if you try and stick a little tube in a big tyre, it tends to go pop.
Yeah, I didn't realise that when I first got some of those tubes, and yeah, they went pop inside a gravel tyre for
twice. Yeah, might have done the same.
Anyway, this new inner tube sheds a few grams, with a Rogue Gravel one now weighing just 35 grams and rolls 6.3% more efficiently than that previous version.
There we go. Not quite as efficient as tubeless, though, we should say,
no,
when you're rolling. Not, yeah. But anyway, good to have tucked away in your saddlebag. Right, more tech now, Dan. Said it was a bumper tech edition. Hunt Wheels have just released some very nice looking wheels called the 5AM Limitless. So these are 58mm deep at the front, 55mm deep at the rear, and they're just 1,215 grams for the pair, which is crazy, and they've only got 15 spokes up front and 18 at the rear.
Ooh, an odd number.
Nice. I know, I didn't think that was possible.
Well, no, I overheard you earlier. So
we spent quite a long time studying the pictures.
That is bonkers light, though,
isn't it? It is bonkers light,
And Hunt are pretty clear that in their testing, the wheels are more aero than their rivals.
Mm. Yeah, what I thought would be particularly useful for you, Dan, though, was that according to the press release, the rims have a high gloss finish that reduces dust collection.
My bikes are not gathering dust anymore. So I know what you're insinuating there. Last week, I rode three times.
Did you?
Twice outside.
Whoa! Well, and actually, because you like a bit of gravel, don't you? So they might have gathered dust whilst cycling.
Well, there is that as well, yes. Yeah. So you're right, they are for me, but not for the reasons that you were suggesting.
Okay, how is the training for 7 gravel going?
It's going all right, yeah. So as I mentioned, I did a couple of gravel rides last week, 2 hours each. I incorporated 2 30-minute sweet spot efforts into both, which was my go-to back in the day. And I really enjoy doing them, actually, not only because they feel like they're pushing you, but not over your limit or even up to your limit. so it feels like it's potent, which is how we used to describe them.
Yeah.
It also makes the rides go really quickly. Like 15 minutes warm-up, first 30-minute one, half an hour of steady riding, another 30-minute one, 15 minutes home.
Gives you average speed as well.
Yeah, well, they've been off-road. I think I average about 26 k's an hour.
Not bad,
well,
mate, for gravel.
Well, a mix of road and off-road. I can't claim to be completely on the gravel. How's yours going?
Good. I'm finding having a training plan really good, actually, for, like, it's not I ever struggle for motivation, but I've definitely been squeezing in more riding. I might have accidentally called one of my rides a training session the other day in front of my wife, who pulled me up on it. She was like, what? And I was like, yeah, I'm going training tomorrow. I know, but she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm
training.
Like, training, yeah, I'm going training. But no, it's well good, actually. I did a 4-hour ride on Sunday.
Mm.
Squeezed that one in, and that was well good.
What time did you start that?
I started it at 6:10.
Oh,
yeah, it was quite. I'd got like about 80 k's from home, and I was like, crikey, it's only 8:10, and it was like, actually, no, it can't be 8:10 for 80 k's. That would have been quite swift, wouldn't it?
Yeah, 40 k's an hour average.
Yeah, probably not that. Probably 8:30. And I was like, well, there we go. Look at me, a long way from home before it's, you know,
very nice.
Anyone's got out of bed. So, yeah, no, it was good, actually. I'm genuinely really looking forward to it. So,
I can't wait to get out there, yeah. I hope I'm fit enough. I'm definitely fit enough to get around it. I feel confident of that already, but I just like to get as fit as possible. A bit more than I am now.
We should say, by the way, we've had so many people getting in contact and, you know, saying hello from Perth, Australia, and, you know, offering help or whatever. So thank you so much for everyone.
Yeah.
We hopefully will be able to meet as many of you as possible. Mm. We're hatching plans, aren't we?
We are, yeah. Might even do a ride, you never know. Right, I've got a reminder for you now of our HJC helmet competition. You can win one of their new Bellas 2 helmets. I really like this lid. It's ventilated, looks really good, and fits me really well as well. Won't make you look like an aero dork, I think is partly what I'm saying.
Yes, it is not aero dorky. To enter the competition, simply hit the link in the description beneath the video.
Finally, a quick bit of news from Zwift now. They are once again partnering up with Sir Chris Hoy and his Tour de Four charity, which aims to challenge perceptions of cancer diagnosis, inspire hope, and raise money for cancer charities.
Yeah, so there is a big charity ride in Scotland in September, but then there are 4 group rides on Zwift as well, one of which is this weekend.
Yeah, make sure you join that if you can. Oh, actually, just before we do move on, a quick mention of the GCN shop. Really, just to say a huge thank you to everyone who supported us by making a purchase over the past few weeks. It's genuinely been lovely to see.
Yeah, as yet, the Spring Classics t-shirts and the prints are still available, but as Cycling Crazed Fool showed us, you can customise it yourself as well. They have put their finishing medal from the We Ride Flanders event last weekend in the frame next to the print.
That's really cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well done for finishing that event as well. It's very tough, that one. Hack /bodge of the week now. First one this week comes in from Matt, who put, I saw this while out on a Sunday ride. The rider was an older man who said he got a really good deal on a carbon fibre bike that he couldn't pass up, but when he got home, realised his aged back wasn't up to the challenge of getting down onto the hood. He's ordered some spacers as a permanent fix, but for today, he wanted to get out and take a leisurely ride through the park. So he rotated the handlebars 180 degrees and was operating the brakes with his thumbs. I wouldn't worry about safety, but he really was just taking it slow and enjoying the sunshine.
Oh, my days. Well, I mean, great that he's getting out there, enjoying the sunshine, getting his exercise. I fundamentally don't even understand how you would brake with your thumbs in that particular setup. But what I worry most is that if he's ordered spacers down to sort it out, he's already maxed out the length of his fork steerer. What he needs is a significantly increased angled stem, basically.
Yeah, he's going to be disappointed when he tries to fit those spacers.
He is, isn't he?
Oh, hopefully somebody tells him that he can't put spacers underneath and still be safe. I don't know why he's turned the bars round now. I mean, you could have just turned them up the other way. That used to be a thing back in... When I was a child, my sister had a road bike and it had the bars up like that, but in the correct direction, if that makes sense.
Andrew Feather rides like that, doesn't he?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much.
Right, anyway, that's a bodge for our poor, unfortunate chap. But we're kind of glad that he's riding his nice bike, regardless. Mm. So
Got a good deal. I'm all for that.
Absolutely. Well, mate. Right, Chris Spray sent in this next one. For when you don't have a pump mount. Just arrived for a fantastic gravel ride in Seville, Spain. One of the riders was concerned he didn't have a pump mount on his rental. Voila, problem fixed with a little bit of electrical tape. Wondering if this is a roadside hack or a bodge. tape fixes everything. I mean, that is absolutely vile. I've just literally just scrolled down and I'm seeing this image for the first time.
Waiting for you to scroll down. When I put that one in, I was like, I hope Si doesn't look at it until he's read it.
Oh, good God. I mean, so many things wrong with this. That's a metal pump attached to a carbon frame, so that's going to scratch up nicely. That is the ugliest electrical tape I've ever seen in my life.
Quite garish, isn't it?
Quite garish. Like, just I mean, please tell me this is a piss tape.
Oh,
that's horrible.
I couldn't wait for you to see that one.
Just stick it in your pocket, for Pete's sake.
Are we going with bodge for that, sir?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, I don't even think it qualifies for a bodge.
OK, well, wait until you see the next one. This one comes in from Northern Mike, who put plumbing tech. My son's a plumber and regularly buys plumber's tape. 50p, new to him.
Oh, wow.
I presume that's trade price. Free and ideal gadget for cleaning the chain when empty for me. Put a bike logo on it and add zero to the price. This is a chain keeper, Si.
We haven't had one of them for a while.
For those of you more recent viewers of GCN, I've been a long time fan of chain keepers. Si cannot see why you would even want one in the first place. So no. I was looking forward to showing you that one as well.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, as far as chain keepers go, that is quite an ingenious chain keeper, and they haven't spent any money on a pointless piece of crap. But yeah. I mean, what is the point?
Well, I mean, ask the pro teams. I sent you photos from the UAE tour where the pro teams were using chain keepers.
Yeah, you did, you did. I'm just an amateur.
All right, go bodgy.
Yeah.
Hack. Absolute hack.
Okay, right, Glenn Hutchison sent this one in. A Campag Chorus Sprint Lever. Okay, when unpacking my bike from its bike box in Murcia last month, I found my Campagnolo Chorus front derailleur shifter was broken. A quick trip to Decathlon to pick up a 3-speed shifter, unwrap the bar tape, remove the cables, install this on the drops, new cable, rewrap the bar tape. It worked for our 4-day trip and shifted pretty well.
I hadn't seen that one either. There we go.
I mean, fair play, like, that...
It worked.
It works, yeah. So if it works, then, you know, that's... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you need your front derailleur, don't you? Where were they again?
Mercia.
Yeah, you need your front derailleur down there, don't you?
Yeah, you do,
What do you think of the bike? Bring back memories?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that wasn't my era, the Rafa Condor JLT team.
Oh, you were still on steel, were you?
No, I rode a very nice carbon Condor, but it was pre-JLT.
Okay.
But yeah, very cool.
Yeah, I'm going hack for that one.
Yeah, because, I'm going hack, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to go around for your cycling trip on the small ring or the big ring alone, do you?
Absolutely, yeah. No, I think this is ingenious.
Final one this week from Matt N. In car bike transport. I don't have a trailer hitch installed on my car and I'm too short to easily put the bike on the top of my car. So instead of laying it in flat in the back, I attached a bike fork mount to the rear seat headrest. Now I just remove the front wheel, insert the bike and attach it using the through axle. I installed one on both sides and now I can transport both my bike and my wife's bike together. All parts, less than $25 total. Bikes stay protected instead, and are easy to get in and out.
I'm sort of trying to work this out. I mean, that seems quite clever.
Yeah, really clever.
I sort of don't really see the point, if I'm honest.
Rather than laying them in the back?
Yeah.
No, that's what I've done for the last 25 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, it's looking like it's more of a faff than just putting the bike in.
Mm.
But it's also quite... clever and pleasingly neat.
It is. It's very neat. Well executed. I'm giving that a hack.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I'll have to as well, because it is well done, even if I don't feel like I would want that myself.
No?
No, I don't
think so. Well, fair enough, so.
Would you not? Would you bother with that?
I like the neatness of that, yeah.
Yeah, but would you actually do it? Would you be like, oh, sod it.
Well, I wouldn't make it, but if someone did it for me, I'd probably go to the effort of putting my forks...
Would you actually?
I reckon so, yeah.
Really?
I don't really mean taking my saddle off and stuff. I'm not going to go too far with it. I've only got so much time.
Okay, right. Anyway, go on. We'll finish on a high. That's a hack. Thank you, Matt N, for sending that one in.
Good stuff.
Yeah, right. Do you keep those hacks coming in? And the bodges as well.
You never remember the website, do you?
No. What is it?
GlobalCyclingNetwork.com/uploader.
It's a fairly straightforward website address, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It is time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in just 1 second after the not-so-small matter of last week's results.
Mm. Last week's photo was this one, Filippo Ganna on the podium having won Dwarsdale-Vlaanderen, almost forgot the name of the race there. I just remember we haven't described any of the previous Hacks and Bodges for podcast listeners. This is Filippo Ganna on a sort of toy pony sat on it. Anyway, our winner this week is Jefferson Punk, who put caption competition. Maybe I celebrated a little too loudly as I crossed the finish line and I'm now feeling a little hoarse.
Oh, God. I mean, there was just something about Filippo Ganna feeling a little hoarse, because, I mean, that is literally what he's doing.
That's what he's doing, yeah.
Yeah,
genius.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think that's great. Well done. Right, get in touch, and we will get your GCN Camelback water bottle out to you. And we can only apologise to our podcast listeners for not describing the hacks and bodges that, you've missed some absolute bangers.
Yeah. Haven't you, basically? Try and catch up on video when you can.
Yeah.
This week's photo comes from the Itzulia Basque Tour. Tour of the Basque Country, basically. How would you like to describe this for podcast listeners?
Well, you've got the holders of the jerseys in the race. So what's that, like five riders stood on the start line. And then just in front of them, facing them, you have a lady who, I mean, she looks like she's in martial arts gear, but I wonder if that's some kind of like local dress, doing what looks like a karate kick in their direction.
Well, that's to the head of Paul Sexas. Important to note that as I get people started with my caption. I mean, it's an interesting photo, isn't it?
It is,
not isolated. I noticed that this was also done on the Finnish podium on a couple of the days as well when I was looking through the photos. Right, I'll get you started.
Go on then.
Check this out. This is a Sexas kick.
Oh,
it does look like she's booting him in the head, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. there we go. Right, if you think you can beat Dan's caption and win yourself a Camelback water bottle, then get in touch. Stick your comment in the caption section down below.
Yeah, or the caption in the comment section down below.
It's the one.
Shortly, we'll let you know what's coming up on GCN this week. First up, some comments from last week's videos. We'll start, as ever, with a few from underneath last week's show. This was all about the world of ultra endurance and whether it's being pushed too far for safety. However, most of the comments centred around Connor's hair, which we'll get onto in a minute. But first, one about the lead story. Pedala Capitala. I've ridden 420 kilometres in just over 24 hours. That is my one-day record for a randonneuring event. I can attest, it's a brutal experience. I can't imagine riding 700 Ks in a single day, much less the last day of an ultra endurance event. Incredible effort.
Yeah. That kind of makes me feel a little bit queasy just thinking about it.
Oh, God, yeah, awful.
Yeah, I don't really feel
like
that.
They beat the record by 7 kilometres. So you sort of had to do the 700 on the last.
Oh, is that what it came down to?
Yeah, you set 1 hour in the last 40.
Yikes. And then, on to the more important matter of Connor's hair, then. Tim McAvoy. Connor looks like he just rolled out of bed with his wild hair.
Toby Ryan. Connor and Dan look like a before and after picture in the Barbers.
And then Shane Andrews. Why does Connor look like he's just got out of bed versus Dan, who just stepped out of the hairdresser?
Do you know, the day after the GCN show came out and we had our morning meeting where we brought up these comments to Connor, and he was genuinely bewildered and disappointed.
Was
apparently,
he actually?
Apparently he'd looked in the mirror that morning and thought his hair looked really quite good that day. He did say, I need to trim my eyebrows, was all he did say.
I wonder whether the eyebrows didn't even get picked up unless they were watching it in 4K on a TV.
Possibly
I think it's possibly
not,
just
also,
the hair.
Yeah, because the hair was also diverting attention away from the eyebrows. Anyway, underneath This Bike is Bonkers and I Love That It Exists, which was Si's first look at that brand new Canyon Enduro race, Kiba Guedes put, imagine you're a stick, quiet on the side of the road, relaxing, retired from your job of being on a tree. Then suddenly, you're put to the job of holding up a £10,000 plus bike made for Mathieu van der Poel. Imagine the pressure, the anxiety that stick felt with the responsibility. Nice work, stick. I had a similar thought myself, Si, when I saw that stick that you'd used.
Do you know what? It did a bloody good job.
Well, yeah.
That stick.
I'm glad it did.
Very good job. And actually, what was really nice is that the stick replied in the comment section. This is the stick 2026. Hey, thanks for the shout-out, buddy. I can confirm that it was indeed a nerve-wracking experience, but also a great honour to hold the world champs bike.
Very good.
Yeah. Did you ever read The Stick Man to your kids?
No, I don't remember.
It's basically, it's quite a famous kids' book. I say here in the UK, I don't know whether it's a famous kids' book elsewhere. But anyway, it's a very sad story about Stickman,
right,
who is basically just like, just a normal kind of guy, stick man with stick family, and then he basically gets picked up by a kid, and then he just goes on this horrendous experience where first of all he gets used to play fetch with a dog, and then he ends up like floating down the sewers in a river, and he basically gets estranged from his family for what can only imagine is like a year or so, and then finally he ends up getting picked up and he's about to get burnt on a fire for Christmas, and then he finally gets rescued by Father Christmas. And I mean, it's a very traumatic story, and I didn't like it at all, but my kids insisted that I read it to them every night.
For, I mean, I cannot believe we haven't saved this for the end of the show nugget side.
Well,
we even got one? Or should people stop watching now?
Yeah, crikey, I totally forgot about that. I was on holiday last week, I forgot about nuggets.
No, we did last week as well. I'm not doing very well with the nuggets. We'll think of one for the end of the show.
Yeah, we will.
You could also be a stick that's done its job on a tree and just fallen to the ground and then be put into one of those races down the stream. Do you ever do that?
Oh, poo sticks.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Why are they called poo sticks?
P-O-O-H, Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh invented it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, we've really gone off topic.
We have. Okay. Yeah, okay. Apologies to not just podcast listeners, but viewers as well. Right, moving on to Under Bike Lanes Aren't Fair, but the alternative is even worse. Loads and loads of comments, so thank you very much. Well over 1,000 already.
You read the first two out because I picked out a couple that are very complimentary of you, Sam.
Oh, really?
I don't want people to think you're bigging up yourself.
Oh, thanks, mate. DC Atai? What are we thinking? Anyway, never mind. When people get used to preferential treatment, equal treatment seems like discrimination. That in reference to basically car drivers feeling like they're having their space stolen away and they're being, discriminated against, basically. So, yeah, that's a very good comment, that one, isn't it?
Yep. Lucas Gehrig. I also think that many people don't realise that bike commuters are reducing the number of cars in the street and space in public transport, thus reducing car traffic for the benefit of car drivers.
Yeah, that's so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, most people, when driving, don't think that they are traffic. They are stuck in traffic when actually you're just part of it, right?
Yeah, exactly that. NYC Wheeler, this is such a great film, guys. Proper and important journalism and really well presented, Si. Always getting some love and discussion on Blue Sky, which is like the new Twitter/X.
Oh, nice. That's cool. Thanks.
Jay McLeod, K. Si, I want to compliment you on your longer 60-minute style episodes. You're really good at these. Keep up the good work.
Ah, yeah, those are nice comments. Mm. Thanks, Dan, for picking those one out. And thank you very much for making them as well. So, and also, I want to say thank you very much for the detail. Comments that some people are leaving about cycling in Paris. Basically, I'm booking a train to Paris, going to go check it out for myself because, as we mentioned earlier in the show, the cycling rates are going absolutely through the roof. So I want to see that. But also, there's been a suggestion, which I picked up on, that actually it's been a bit discriminatory. But apparently that's not the case. Paris is currently building 200 more kilometres of metro tracks. Wow. Yeah. Anyway, that's super cool as well, isn't it?
Finally, underneath how to go faster for about the same amount of power.
Roughly.
We had this from Gixxer750 Pilot. If you'd zipped your gilet up and didn't cross your chain, you'd have been even faster. Love you, Alex. Signed off for that one.
On a similar note, Faisal555 said, tips for Alex. One, don't ride while keeping your gilet open. Two, book a lecture with Dr. Bridgewood about your massive aero wastage. And then Kwok Bayon Guyen said, three, go to the basement of Cy Sideburnson and bring a clipper. So, not copping abuse for my crap haircut anymore, Dan.
No.
People are thinking...
It's growing out, that's why.
Right, I know, I need to go back and get it again.
I'm going to get it again.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to be in the GCN show again that week.
Well, it'll make you look good, so that's all right.
I just won't look at the comments.
It's not contagious.
Right then, finally, what's coming up on the channel this week? We've got a video actually coming out for you tomorrow. If you're watching this as it comes out on Tuesday, if not, it's coming out on Wednesday. We can't tell you much about it though, but I got to ride, and so did Ollie Bridgewood, a brand new, quite incredible bike in one of the most beautiful places for bike riding in the world, the Ligurian coastline and inland in Italy near San Remo there.
It's a tough gig, wasn't it?
It was a really tough gig, so I'm still recovering to this point, actually.
Yeah.
The trauma of it.
Yeah.
But well worth watching, I would say, on that one.
Brutal.
On Saturday, I tried getting heavier to ride faster. This is Ollie again, isn't it?
Ollie has spent all winter in the gym chasing gains,
yeah.
hasn't he? And so this is the explanation of why, also how, and then finally whether it's working, I think.
It is, yeah.
So anyway, look forward to watching that one.
It's well worth watching that because he's been very meticulous in how he's gone about his gym training, hasn't he? And how he's put...
When you say meticulous, what you mean is utterly obsessional.
Yeah, as he usually is with most things that he puts his mind to.
Yes,
yeah.
yes. The amount of rides that Ollie has turned up to with massive DOMS because he couldn't possibly rearrange his gym session from the night before to the night afterwards. Yes. Anyway, and then Sunday, you have been looking at what supplements pro cyclists are actually using at the moment, which is quite intriguing.
I have indeed, and I've even spoken to the head nutritionist at UAE Team Emirates, who, of course, advises Tadej Pogacar on what supplements to use that can be both performance-enhancing but also potentially reduce the chance of getting ill, etc.
Nice!
Yep, so make sure you watch that coming out on Sunday. I thought of a very quick nugget.
Oh, yeah.
Many of you will remember that Lorraine, my wife, had been riding on Zwift through the winter months to see how much her VO2 max improved. There was a massive improvement there. She's carried on doing it, and I was looking at her Whoop data the other day, and it's really quite incredible the way that her resting heart rate has been gradually coming down for the last 4 months. Her heart rate variability has been gradually going up. Her pace of aging has dipped right down, and her Whoop age has also dipped right down over the last year. It's honestly quite incredible to see the difference
that yeah.
just 2 45-minute Zwift sessions per week, on top of what she was already doing, have made to her sort of general fitness and health.
That's properly cool, isn't it?
Hopefully those graphics will have been on the screen so you can see for yourself.
That is a good nugget, actually.
I was trying to think of that whilst you were wittering on about something else.
Sticks?
Yeah, that's
basically.
Sticks. Right.
Cool. Okie doke. Well, good luck training this week, Dan.
Thank you very much. You too.
Thank you. Hopefully your Whoop scores will be improving.
Fingers crossed. We'll see.
All right. See you next week.